Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
You're listening to Text Message, the UK-focused technology podcast with me, Nate Langson.
And me, Ian Morris.
And if you're one of our Patreon supporters, this is your extended ad-free version of the show. And thank you to patrons including Ian Baxter, Captain Caveman, David Whitney, who are supporting us directly, along with many more. And you can join them, get access to our full-length ad-free show, our Patreon-exclusive weekly sister show, Extra Message, our live Discord. You get all sorts. We've got people listening live right now. We've got, in fact, Ian Baxter's in the chat room. We've got Mark. We've got Luke, Nick, Pangolin Sandwich, Richard Taylor. It's a party. And you can get your invite by going to patreon.com/UK Tech. Well, thanks to KV in our Discord for sharing the following story with us this week. He pointed out that the BBC had wrote that the mystery of why an entire village lost its broadband every morning at 7 a.m. was solved when engineers discovered an old television was to blame. An unnamed householder in Wales, in a little hamlet, little rural hamlet, was unaware that their old set would emit a signal that could interfere with the entire village's broadband. After 18 months, engineers began an investigation after a cable replacement program had failed to fix the issue, and the embarrassed householder promised not to use the TV again, and the village now has a stable signal. Openreach engineers were apparently baffled by the continuous problem, and it wasn't until they used a monitoring device that they found the fault. What they noticed is that the householder would switch on their TV set every single morning at exactly 7 a.m, and an electrical interference that was admitted by the faulty set was affecting the broadband signal. The owner didn't want to be named, but apparently was quoted as mortified in this BBC story to find out that their old TV signal was causing the problem, and agreed they would switch it off and never use it again. And what I love about this is the fact that we're hearing about it after the mystery's been solved, and I just wish we'd have heard about it during the 18 months that they were trying to find the answer, because it sounds like a wonderful little mystery. It sounds like a Simon Pegg film waiting to happen, or something like this. Apparently engineers were walking around the villages with monitors, it's like a spectrum analyzer thing, to find electrical noise just in the wilderness that could help them pinpoint the problem. And they were baffled that every time they were doing this at 7 a.m, like clockwork, according to a quote from Openreach, the broadband would just go off, and they couldn't detect anything initially, until they used a different type of measuring system, and they found that the TV was emitting something called a single high-level impulse noise, or shine for short, apparently, which causes electrical interference in other devices. Now, I did some research on this, Ian, as will, I'm sure, come as absolutely no surprise to you, or indeed to anyone, because I thought it was weird that Openreach was involved. I just sort of assumed that this little village, this hamlet, was using some kind of satellite internet or something of that like, but they weren't. They were using regular DSL over copper phone lines. So I thought it was really, like, how can a TV take out a hamlet broadband when the broadband is cable and one TV set, one single set, which obviously is wireless, having this effect? And I found a support article on the ISP Zen. To my knowledge, no connection to any of the people in this hamlet, but it had a really good explanation of how this kind of a problem can work. And I'm going to read out part of this article, and I'm going to put a link to the story in so you can look into it yourself. Repetitive electrical impulse noise and single isolated impulse noise describe interference that can affect the stability and performance of a broadband service. In both cases, a power source generating interference or generates an interference in the frequencies used by ADSL broadband services. There are two types, there's this Rhine and Shine. And Shine is the one when it's generated as a burst, usually when a device is powered on or is turned off, for example, rather than something that's continuous, which is what the other one is. And some other examples of what can cause problems like this: faulty power adapters, which I can believe, timed devices, things like central heating, Christmas tree lights, and it points out that those with a flash setting are particularly problematic, EPOS, so your electronic point of sale devices, railway power lines, street lights, roadworks, power cables that run close to telephone wirings in a house, and also faulty set-top boxes, televisions, and other appliances. And apparently you can pinpoint devices that are emitting this signal if you use an AM or a medium wave radio tuned specifically to 612 kilohertz. So essentially what it seems was happening is the TV was blasting one big signal at this particular setting that was hitting the phone line, and then it was blowing something essentially through the phone line, hence affecting the other houses who are all connected using the same cables, which also goes to explain why this was problematic because of the cabling rather than it being wireless, because you would assume that if it was wireless, maybe the further away from this house you were, the less affected you'd be. Apparently.
Yeah, but so it was people on the same copper line, or was it the whole exchange?
Well, bear in mind this is a little hamlet, so we're talking a handful of houses, so they're basically they're all connected to the same bit of, you know, central wiring, and that was enough for one person's TV set to hit their home internet and for it to go down the cable and blow everyone else's power off as well.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not surprised by that, to be honest. I mean, you know, ADSL and DSL technologies, you know, they need to be synced to the exchange in a very specific way, and so any impulse noise that happened to interrupt that syncing process it's very obvious that it would cause massive problems. So I don't think it surprises me. I like the story. I think it's hilarious, and I think it's a good example of why we do so much testing on electrical equipment before it can be sold. You know, you'll often see on the back of a power adapter that it's been certified, and that means that they've checked for unusual amounts of noise as a result of it being used, and everything should be quite clean. But obviously, old TVs where perhaps they're going faulty, it's quite conceivable they would produce quite a lot of noise. It's brilliant though. Love it.
It's great, isn't it? I mean, we had a technical issue at the beginning of our show recording today that I promise I didn't manufacture as relevant entertainment, given we're going to talk about this story. But we spent about 20 minutes between all of our live listeners and Ian and myself trying to figure out why the listeners could hear part of what we're going to be using in the next story, even though, and I couldn't, even though we're all wired up using the same cables, and any other file that I played off my secondary device, I could hear fine. And we pinpointed the answer, and I'm going to do something fun with that recording, we think. But we fixed that in 20 minutes through a process of elimination. And this problem with the TV and the broadband in this little hamlet in Wales went on for 18 months. I mean, I just can't understand why something would take that long if it's apparently such a well-known issue that this can be the cause. But who knows? You know, apparently it can.
Well, as much as anything, I think it's about tracking down what the problem is. It might have been obvious, that it was a signal problem, but finding out the source of it would have been difficult. And there's not very much you can do to mitigate it, really, is there? You know,
apparently not. Well, have you destroyed the internet connectivity of your entire town inadvertently by using a crap television? Let us know by sending an email to uktechshow@icloud.com. If you haven't, can you imagine what it would be like if you have? We're going to talk, Ian, about cash, because Wired wrote an article this week with the headline, "The Pandemic Has Killed Cash." And it went on to describe that Britain's cash points, or holes in the walls, or I suppose to most people, ATMs, withdrawals from them have dropped. Well, they did drop 60% when the lockdown started in March. That's according to Link, the company that operates, well, I think it's the largest operator of ATMs across the country. And constituency data obtained from the GMB trade union showed that cash machines are vanishing at a breakneck rate, an average of 8.9% drop across the country between April to June this year. And throughout lockdown, about 9,000 ATMs have been disconnected from Link's network at some point, partly as a result of public places closing during the peak of our first wave, or there were neighbouring machines that were removed in order to prevent social distancing. So you sometimes see banks of four, maybe every other one was not to be used. A bit like the urinals in gentlemen's public toilets. If you see four, then there are only really two available at any one time. Where was I? I distracted myself with talk of urinals. Anyway, as of July, Wired writes, only 33% of the 9,000 that have been disconnected have been reconnected, and withdrawal volumes have picked up once restrictions have eased, but figures from as recently as the 20th of September show that usage of ATMs across the country is still 40% lower now than it was in the same time in 2019. Now, this comes as very little of a surprise to me, Ian, and I'll, it'd be interesting to know if it is for you too. What intrigued me about this is just the fact that some of these machines were being put back on at all after being disconnected. Because have you ever seen a queue for an ATM in the last 5 years?
No, I haven't seen a queue for an ATM for a very long time.
Yeah, I can't see, I can't remember the last time I saw a queue, maybe somewhere in Soho on a Friday night, possibly, but queues for cash machines is pretty rare these days, I think. Although Mark in our live chat says right now at his local Tesco this morning, because they only had one that was working, Ian in the chat says, I haven't had cash in my pocket for 3 or 4 months. I can't remember the last time I had cash in my pocket ever. I mean,
I've got cash in my pocket right now. I think this is I don't believe in cashless as a, you know, total option at all. I don't want a cashless society.
Why?
Because I don't want everyone knowing what I spend my money on all the time. I mean, I just don't. I know that there's a sort of naivety about that. But if I want to go to the pub and drink three beers, I would, you know, I'd prefer to pay with that, with cash, honestly, because I don't want my bank to see pub, and I don't want people knowing. I just think it's a total, I think we should be able to do our thing without the constant scrutiny of banking. And whilst obviously, you know, cashless is a more efficient method of operating, I don't want that kind of oversight, and I don't want the sort of creep that comes with it.
Okay, interesting. It's good. It's good that we disagree on something legitimately for one reason. I mean, I'm not in favor of a completely cashless society, and I do buy your point. Not with cash, obviously. With contactless.
I'm afraid I don't accept cash. So.
Okay. Well, going back to the Wired article briefly, Nick in our live chat just talked about hookers and cash. If you know that for sure, then great. Anyway, Wired gave an account of someone else negatively affected by this, a gentleman by the name of Eric, a former builder, bus driver, window cleaner, and general labourer, who is aged 89 and said to Wired, quote, I only go to the shop or the ATM in good weather because a strong wind could knock me over. Being able to get my money is very important so that I can pay the people that come to my house to help me, he says. I have the hairdresser, toenail care, gardener, and handyman who all insist on being paid in cash. So this will be an interesting one to put to you, Ian, because whenever somebody says to me they insist on being paid in cash, my first thought is that they are tax evaders, and the only reason to insist on cash is because you don't want to pay tax.
That's, I mean, that is one reason.
So my question about this gentleman, this particular quote here, is not so much that there is an 89-year-old who wants to pay cash. It's more that he's being potentially forced to use only cash because the people that he does business with force him to use cash. Whereas actually, I think he, I mean, the context of this particular person is that he is a high risk person from COVID-19, and so he doesn't actually want to have to go out, but he has to because these people want cash. To my eyes, he would be a great candidate for somebody who should be cashless. And obviously, I appreciate that a lot of people who don't use it don't use tech is because they're not tech savvy, or they don't have a device or internet or something, and that's fair enough. But I put the blame in this scenario on people who insist on paying cash, because I don't feel there's an excuse to only accept cash. Also, it's quite expensive to deal with cash.
It is. In fact, I mean, that's one of the reasons that cashback is a thing. So obviously, I mean, cashback, probably no one uses it anymore. But one of the reasons that supermarkets and the like decided to do that was that it was very expensive to handle cash. It comes with risks. Obviously, if your store gets broken into, you're at risk of losing that cash. So one of the ways of dealing with it and reducing your banking costs was to give the cash back to customers and to move that charge onto a credit card or not a credit card, a debit card. So that's where that came from. But, you know, I mean, your suspicion about people not paying tax, I mean, there are some things. For example, so say, for example, that I decide to give you £6,000. Technically, you'd have to pay tax on that, right? But if I just decide to give it to you, like, are you really that inclined to pay tax on it? Even if it is technically against the law? There are limits. Like, I'm not saying that businesses should operate on cash only to avoid tax. And I'm not, you know, and likewise, I think, you know, for most transactions and stuff like that, you know, obviously we should be paying tax. It's perfectly reasonable. But there are some examples where you just think, you know what, I'm going to give someone £6,000. I don't want the government knowing about it. I don't think anyone should pay tax on it. It's my money. I've paid tax on it. I don't see why anyone else should have to pay another set of tax on it. I get that that's a slightly morally ambiguous argument, but it's one I just thought I would make. Mm. And, you know, you do not want banks and the government knowing everything about you. You just don't. So I think there is a perfectly reasonable argument to be made that some transactions should be cash, and you should do it just to throw them off the scent, no matter what.
I can buy that.
You know, I believe very strongly that paying tax is, you know, my responsibility as a someone who earns money, and I feel like we have to support society. That said, I don't agree with all of the tax. I think some of it is a pain. And, you know,
I suppose my argument really in all this is it's not really a tax issue. It's more wanting to get, like, basically I want to get rid of paper. Like, I hate paper. I won't use any paper. If it can be digital, then it has to be. And to me, cash is just more paper, or it's more stuff for me to lose.
It's a pain. It carries diseases. It's unclean. You know.
That's why I want to get rid of it. It's just that in my experience, in my personal experience, being forced to deal with cash always comes across in the situations that I've come across it. As being necessitated by someone's desire to not pay tax. And I'm not saying that's the case for everyone. And obviously, speaking to you, it isn't. But that has been my experience in recent years.
Yeah. And I mean, the thing is, you're never going to get rid of it in certain industries. Like, I mean, builders, you know, you'll very often find that a builder will give you two prices, you know, one for a, you know, bank transfer and one for cash, because if you pay cash, they don't have to charge you VAT and they can tuck that money away somewhere and, you know, not pay. And I don't agree with that. I think that's fundamentally wrong. But,
well, Kate in our chat room suggested that I talk about the pub we went to, and she's right. She and I went to a pub a couple of years ago, and we hadn't been out on a night out for ages, and we just thought we'd go and sample one. We thought there was going to be some live music on, and we got there and there was no live music, and it was sort of one of those scenarios where you walk in, like in the old Western bars, and the honky-tonk piano stops and everyone turns and looks at you. And we felt a little bit out of place. And then we ordered a drink, and they poured the drinks, and they charged us, and I gave them the card, and they said, "We don't take cards, it's cash only." And I just thought, is that not really weird? To be a fairly decent-sized pub in the middle of a fairly busy town that only accepts cash.
Well, we'd have to check this, but my understanding is it's perfectly legal not to accept cards, but I do not believe that you're allowed to not accept cash. So you couldn't, I don't think you could be a...
You can definitely not accept, nowhere's accepting cash at the moment. That's sort of the point of all this.
Well, no, they will accept it, because don't forget, a lot of people don't, you know, that a lot of people operate entirely on cash and don't have... maybe bank accounts even, in the very extreme cases. So I think you'll find that whilst they would rather you didn't use cash, it's not prohibited. You can do it.
Mm.
Okay. You know, I mean, you think about it. I mean, there are people alive today who were having a bank account would have been a complete... just it would have been something you would never have thought about having. You know, people were paid in cash for the work that they did. They took the cash home, they kept the cash, they probably spent all of that cash in a week. You know, the idea that we're talking about having a bank, for a lot of people having a bank account is pointless if you're earning a certain amount and spending it all that week. And you've got to remember that a lot of people live literally on their salaries. So I do, there are a lot of reasons I don't like it. I'm not surprised it's declined in recent times. I think if anyone ever suggests that we get rid of cash, we should fight it tooth and nail. But I don't care about the choices people individually make. If you want to pay with a card all the time, that's absolutely fine. And I'm all for, you know, making it as easy as possible to pay with cards, because it is more convenient. I do it all the time.
Well, what a debate that was, which is exactly what I hoped for. I hope it provokes a response from listeners. We do often, well, pretty much after every story, suggest people write in. This is one I'd really, really welcome people's feedback on, that we can go through next week. UKTechShow@iCloud.com. What is your experience with cash? Do you side more here with Ian or I? Maybe you're living in a country or just a part of the UK that has an ambivalent relationship with cash. Who knows? Be great to get some feedback from people. And we'll include a link to the Wired story, as always, in the show notes at uktechshow.com. According to the Guinness World Records, the fastest time to reach 1 million followers on Instagram is now 4 hours and 44 minutes and was achieved by Sir David Attenborough on the 24th of September 2020. As of recording, he now has 4.2 million followers and has made 4 posts, including his introduction. I thought we could have a listen. Do you have a listen?
Yes, please.
To this?
Yeah, after all that, yeah.
Yeah. All right. Here's how David Attenborough welcomed himself to the world.
Hello. My name is David Attenborough, and I've been appearing on radio and television for the past 60 years. But this is my first time on Instagram. And I'm making this move and exploring this new way of communication to me, because, as we all know, the world is in trouble. Continents are on fire. Glaciers are melting. Coral reefs are dying. Fish are disappearing from our oceans. The list goes on and on. But we know what to do about it. And that's why I'm tackling this new way, for me, of communication. Over the next few weeks, I'll be recording messages to explain what the problems are and how we can deal with them. Join me, or as we used to say in those early days of radio, stay tuned.
I could listen to him all day, as I know many people could. Why did I pick this story out, you may wonder? Part of the reason is I don't like talking about things that bum everybody out. No one needs another podcast about how tech is destroying everything, or how COVID is killing everyone, or politics or anything like that. This show is meant to be a little bit of a safe haven. And I thought there was something quite lovely that the record holder for reaching 1 million followers on Instagram is Sir David Attenborough, talking about, admittedly, catastrophic problems with the Earth and its destruction by man, but also ending on an optimistic note that there's stuff that we can do about it. I don't know. I like that. I was pleased by it.
Yeah.
Were you pleased by it? Plus, it's an excuse to hear a little bit of David Attenborough's voice, which I don't think you ever need a real reason to do, but this was a good one, I think.
No, and I think it's wonderful that someone like David Attenborough can manage to get such a large following so quickly. I think that in itself is a sign of some hope for us. If his, you know, a man who has now dedicated a lot of his life to conservation and the protection of the planet can reach 1 million quicker than a Friends star, that's got to be a positive sign, right? And I love Friends, don't get me wrong, but I do feel like there is some fripperies in the world that we could do without, and Sir David is not one of those.
No.
Yeah.
Well, you did mention the Friends star. So this is the person that who held the previous record, according to Guinness, which said that Sir David beat Friends star Jennifer Aniston, who set the previous record for the fastest time to reach 1 million followers late last year. She managed to do it in 5 hours and 16 minutes. So he beat her by just over half an hour to 1 million.
I'd just like to announce that I'm going to be the slowest person to reach 1 million. On Instagram, and I'll never achieve it.
Oh,
I don't care.
Are you on Instagram?
Yeah, kind of. I don't use it. The only social now I use is Twitter again, and I'm not entirely sure I've made the right decision there. But anyway,
Well, Sir David has got a long way to go before he reaches the likes of footballer Ronaldo, who has something like 250 million followers or something.
But it
is reassuring that the arrival of David Attenborough can at least cause an instant surge in interest, which is pretty good, which is good. So go and follow him. He's just David Attenborough on Instagram. Should come as no surprise, really. And I think, will that do it for this story? I think we've probably done that enough. No one wants to hear about the times I've met David Attenborough, do you? Oh, you do? Okay. Well, there was...
Oh, Lord. I was in the same room as him once. That's the best I can do.
Oh, were you?
Yeah, I went to a natural history VR thing with Samsung, and he was there. He didn't speak.
Oh. That's weird. Isn't that like going to see the Pope and not praying?
Actually, is that right? Did he speak? I can't remember. I remember thinking, oh, there's Sir David. Wonderful. I'm sitting right behind him, in fact. And then I seem to remember there wasn't really a lot of talking. He maybe did a short piece, but yeah. And then left. But it was wonderful anyway.
Oh. Well,
you were going to tell a story about when you met him.
No, I wasn't. I mean, I was going to point out that someone said I shouldn't meet him because I met Patrick Moore and he died a few weeks later. I met Stephen Hawking and he died a few weeks later. And somebody suggested that I shouldn't meet any other like British treasures because apparently me meeting them means that they end up dying quite soon afterwards. But so far, I'm pleased to say that David Attenborough is alive and well, and long may that continue. We love him.
You're used to hearing the smooth, velvet sound of Nate's voice drizzled over your ears like a warm eardrum syrup, topped off with the freshly squeezed citrus tang of an Ian Morris opinion. Supporters of the show at patreon.com/UKTech enjoy second helpings every week. So pull up a chair, find your nearest spoon, and tuck into a sumptuous extra helping with no commitment. If you have any allergies, please inform a waiter.
Well, Ian, do you have any idea who keeps us posted on what's going on in the wider world of tech each
Yes,
week?
I do. It's Tom Merritt.
It is. Do you want to hear his voice?
Yes! Telling...
All right, here, let's find out. Here we go. 3, 2, 1, Tom.
This week on Daily Tech News Show, Amazon wants to fly a drone around your house and figured out how to launch a streaming video game service on iOS. That and a bunch of new looks for the Echo. We followed the logic on TikTok's deal with Oracle and Walmart and awaited the US and China's approval and talked about Microsoft putting its cloud service in orbit and using robots to predict the spread of disease. All that and much more at DailyTechNewsShow.com.
Do you want to know something I would never do, Ian?
What's that? Yes, please.
Murder a person.
Oh, well, I mean, I wouldn't do that either.
Do you know what else I wouldn't do?
I mean, that is the sort of thing a murderer would say anyway. But yeah, go on, what?
I would never have an Amazon drone flying around my house.
No, I'm sort of in agreement with you there. I think, why would I allow that? But, you know, it's for the Americans. The Americans are much happier to buy into corporations than I think a lot of the rest of the world.
I don't know if I would agree with that.
Well, I think. I mean, it's a horrible stereotype. But really, this sort of thing, it's not a good idea, is it?
If you're Amazon, it's great. I'd still think that if Amazon has a drone, then I want it to have a little grappling hook on it because I want it to not only do certain things that I want, like fly around and give me security updates, but I want it, if I'm in the bathroom, bring me another bog roll. Or if I'm in my studio, I need it to bring me a cup of tea because my wife's in the other room watching someone stream drawings and she can't make me one even though I have a very dry throat right now. But Amazon isn't solving those particular problems and that's why I'm not interested. Also, I don't trust
And you don't want it being able to look around your home without any oversight. Let's be honest, it's not a great thing for anyone that even has a passing interest in privacy.
Yeah. You know, I think it was on an episode of DTNS this week. Somebody mentioned that a lot of smart devices all have cameras in the same place they have screens. And that's not always a great way for things to be. Like, you don't always want a camera in the place you have a screen. And I think a bathroom was given as an example of that. But a lot of products are designed where it's all in one. And I thought that was a very interesting point, because you're right, there are lots of things where you might want to put the camera somewhere different to the screen, but that's not the way products are built a lot of the time.
Indeed.
Anyway, that all came up on DTNS. That's quite the plug for Tom, but it's a great show. Go and listen to it now, because we're done. Thank you, Ian. It's been a pleasure for, I'm sure, you, certainly me at times.
Yes, I agree. It's been an all-round great time for all.
It has. Take care, everybody. Oh, I've just had crazy deja vu. Oh, and I just had it again, talking about it. Oh, that was spooky. Bye.
Bye.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50. Luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.